Chapter 15. The cape in bullfighting was the original means of defense against the danger of the animal. Later, when the fiesta became formalized, its uses were to run the bull when he first came out, to take the bull away from the fallen picador, and to place him before the next picador who was to receive his charge, to place him in position for the banderillas, to place him in position for the matador, and to distract his attention when any bullfighter had gotten himself into a compromising position. The whole aim and culmination of the bullfight was the final sword thrust, the moment of truth, and the cape was, in principle, only an adjunct used to run the bull and help towards preparing that moment. In modern bullfighting, the cape has become increasingly important and its use increasingly dangerous, and the original moment of truth or of reality, the killing, has become a very tricky business indeed. The matadors take turns in being responsible for taking the bull away from the picador in his mount and protecting the man and the horse after the bull's charge. This act of taking the bull out into the ring away from the man and horse and then supposedly placing him in position to charge the next picador is called the quite, or removing. The matadors stand in line on the left of the horse and rider, and the one who takes the bull out and away from the fallen man and horse goes to the rear of the line when he comes back from making the quite. The quite, pronounced quite, from being merely an act of protection for the picador, performed as quickly, as valiantly, and as gracefully as possible, has now become an obligation on the matador performing it, after he has taken the bull out, to pass the bull with the cape, in whatever style he elects, but usually in Veronica's, at least 4 times, as closely, as quietly, and as dangerously as he is able. A bullfighter is now judged and paid much more on the basis of his ability to pass the bull quietly, slowly, and closely with the cape than on his ability as a swordsman. The increasing importance and demand for the style of cape work and work with the muleta that was invented or perfected by Juan Belmonte, the expectation and demand that each matador pass the bull, giving a complete performance with the cape in the quites, and the pardoning of deficiency in killing of a matador who is an artist with the cape and muleta, are the main changes in modern bullfighting. The present quite, as a matter of fact, has become almost as much a moment of truth as the killing ever was. The danger is so real, so controlled and selected by the man, and so apparent, and the slightest tricking or simulating of danger shows so clearly, that the modern quites, in which the matadors rival each other in invention and in seeing with what purity of line, how slowly and how closely they can make the horns of the bull pass their waists, keeping him dominated and slowing the speed of his rush with the sweep of the cape controlled by their wrists, the whole hot bulk of the bull passing the man, who looks down calmly where the horns almost touch, and sometimes do touch his thighs, while the bull's shoulders touch his chest, with no move of defense against the animal, and no means of defense against the death that goes by in the horns, except the slow movement of his arms and his judgment of distance. These passes are finer than any cape work of the past, and as emotional as anything can be. It is to have an animal that they can do this with, increasing the closeness of the horns until they actually touch the man, that the bullfighters pray for a straight-charging bull, and it is the modern cape work, supremely beautiful, supremely dangerous, and supremely arrogant, that has kept bullfighting popular and increasingly prosperous through a period when all was decadence and the cape the only real moment of truth. Matadors torear with the cape now as never before. The good ones have taken Belmonte's invention of working close in the bull's territory, keeping the cape low, and using only the arms, and made it even better than Belmonte did. Better than Belmonte if they have a bull that suits them. There has been no decadence in bullfighting in the use of the cape. There has not been a renaissance, but a constant, steady, and complete improvement. I will not describe the different ways of using the cape, the gallonera, the mariposa, the farol, or the older ways, the cambios de rodillas, the galleos, the serpentinas, in the detail I have described the Veronica, because a description in words cannot enable you to identify them before you have seen them as a photograph can. Instantaneous photography has been brought to such a point that it is silly to try and describe something that can be conveyed instantly as well as studied in a picture. But the Veronica is the touchstone of all cape work. It is where you can have the utmost in danger, beauty, and purity of line. It is in the Veronica that the bull passes the man completely, and in bullfighting, the greatest merit is in those maneuvers where the bull passes the man in his charge. Nearly all other passes with the cape are picturesque variations of the same principle, or else are more or less tricks. The one exception to this is the quite of the mariposa, or the butterfly, invented by Marcial Alanda. This, the photograph shows clearly what it is, partakes more of the principle of the muleta than the cape. Its merit is when it is done slowly, and when the folds of the cape that correspond to the butterfly wings swing back from the bull, moved suavely rather than snatched away, while the man shifts backward from side to side. When it is done properly, each backward swing of the wings of the cape is like a passe natural with the muleta and is as dangerous. I have seen no one but Marcial Alanda do it well. The imitators, especially the steel-sinewed, leg-jittering, eagle-nosed Vicente Barrera of Valencia, do the mariposa as though they snatched the cape from under the bull's nose by electricity. There is a good reason why they do not do it slowly. If you do it slowly, there is danger of death. Originally, quites were made preferably by the use of largas. In these, the cape was fully extended and one end offered to the bull, who was drawn away following the extended cape and then turned on himself to fix him in place by a movement made by the matador, who would swing the cape over his shoulder and walk away. These could be executed with great elegance. Many variations were possible. Largas could be done while the man knelt, and the cape could be so swung that it would wind in the air like a snake, making the so-called serpentinas and other fantasies that Rafael El Gallo did so well. But in all largas, the principle was that the bull followed the loose length of the cape and was finally turned on himself and fixed by a movement of the cape's end imparted to it by the man who held the opposite extremity. Their advantage was that they turned the bull less brusquely than the two-handed passes with the cape, and so kept the animal in better condition to attack during the final act. The amount of cape work that is now done with the bull by the matadors alone is, of course, very destructive to him. If the object of the fight had remained, as it was originally, simply to put the bull in the best condition for the killing, the amount that the matadors used the cape using both hands would be indefensible. But as bullfighting has progressed, or decayed, so that the killing is now only a third of the fight rather than the whole end, and the cape work and the muleta work a large two-thirds, the type of bullfighter has changed. Rarely, extremely rarely, do you get a matador who is both a great killer and a great artist with the cape or muleta. As rarely as you would get a great boxer who was also a first-rate painter. To be an artist with the cape, to use it as well as it can be used, takes an aesthetic sense that can only be a handicap to a great killer. A great killer must love to kill. He must have extraordinary courage and ability to perform two distinctly different acts with two hands at the same time, much more difficult than patting your head with one hand and rubbing your stomach with the other. He must have a primitive and all-controlling sense of honor, for there are many ways to trick the killing of bulls without going straight in on them, but above all, he must love to kill. To most of the bullfighters who are artists, starting with Rafael El Gallo and going on down through Chicuelo, the necessity to kill seems almost regrettable. They are not matadors, but toreros. Highly developed, sensitive manipulators of cape and muleta. They do not like to kill. They are afraid to kill, and 90 times out of 100, they kill badly. Bullfighting has gained greatly by the art they have brought to it, and one of the great artists, Juan Belmonte, learned to kill well enough. Although he was never a great killer, he had enough of the natural killer in him to develop it, and such a great pride in doing everything perfectly that he finally became acceptable and secure as a killer after being deficient for a long time. But there was always a wolf look about Belmonte, and there is nothing of the wolf in any of the other aestheticians that have developed since his time. And since they cannot kill honestly, since they would be driven out of bullfighting if they had to kill bulls as they should be killed, the public has taken to expecting and wanting the maximum they can give the cape and the muleta, regardless of its final fitting of the bull for killing, and the structure of bullfighting has been changed accordingly. Madam, does all this writing of the bullfights bore you? Old lady,
no, sir, I cannot say it does, but I can only read so much of it at one time.
I understand. A technical explanation is hard reading. It is like the simple directions which accompany any mechanical toy and which are incomprehensible.
Old lady, I would not say your book is that bad, sir.
Thank you. You encourage me. But is there nothing I can do to keep your interest from flagging? Old lady,
it does not flag. It is only that I get tired sometimes.
To give you pleasure, then.
Old lady, you give me pleasure.
Thank you, madam, but I mean in the way of writing or conversation.
Old lady, well, sir, since we have stopped early today, why do you not tell me a story?
About what, madam?
Old lady, anything you like, sir, except I would not like another one about the dead. I am a little tired of the dead.
Ah, madam, the dead are tired, too.
Old lady, no tireder than I am of hearing of them, and I can speak my wishes. Do you know any of the kind of stories Mr. Faulkner writes?
A few, madam, but told baldly, they might not please you.
Old lady, then do not tell them too baldly.
Madam, I will tell you a couple, and see how short and how far from bald I can make them. What sort of story would you like first?
Old lady, do you know any true stories about those unfortunate people?
A few, but in general they lack drama, as do all tales of abnormality. Since no one can predict what will happen in the normal, while all tales of the abnormal end much the same.
Old lady, just the same, I would like to hear one. I have been reading of these unfortunate people lately, and they are very interesting to me.
All right. This is a very short one, but well written it could be tragic enough, but I will not try to write it, but only to tell it quickly. I was eating at the Anglo-American Press Association lunch in Paris and sat next to the man who told this story. He was a poor newspaper man, a fool, a friend of mine, and a garrulous and dull companion, and he lived at a hotel too expensive for his salary. He still held his job because the circumstances which were later to demonstrate how poor a newspaper man he was had not yet arisen. He told me at lunch that he had slept very badly the night before because there had been a row going on the whole night in the room next to his at the hotel. About 2 o'clock, someone had knocked on his door and begged to be let in. The newspaper man had opened the door, and a dark-haired young man, about 20, in pajamas and a new-looking dressing gown, came into the room crying. At first he was too hysterical to make much sense, except to give the newspaper man the impression that something horrible had been narrowly averted. It seemed this young man had arrived with his friend in Paris on that day's boat train. The friend, who was a little older, he had met only recently, but they had become great friends, and he had accepted his friend's invitation to come abroad as his guest. His friend had plenty of money, and he had none, and their friendship had been a fine and beautiful one until tonight. Now everything in the world was ruined for him. He was without money. He would not see Europe. At this point, he sobbed again, but nothing on earth would induce him to go back into that room. He was firm on this point. He would kill himself first. He really would. Just then there was another knock on the door, and the friend, who was also a fine, clean-cut-looking American youth, wearing an equally new and expensive-looking dressing gown, came into the room. On the newspaperman asking him what this was all about, he said it was nothing. His friend was overwrought from the trip.
At this, the first friend commenced crying again and said nothing on earth would make him go back into that room. He would kill himself, he said. He would absolutely kill himself. He went back, however, finally, after some very sensible, reassuring pleading by the older friend, and after the newspaper man had given them each a brandy and soda, and advised them to cut it all out and get some sleep. The newspaper man did not know what it was all about, he said, but thought it was something funny all right, and anyway he went to sleep himself and was awakened by what sounded like fighting in the next room, and someone saying, "I didn't know it was that! I didn't know it was that! I won't! I won't!" followed by what the newspaper man described as a despairing scream. He hammered on the wall and the noise ceased, but he could hear one of the friends sobbing. He took it to be the same one who had sobbed earlier. "Do you want any help?" the newspaperman asked. "Do you want me to get someone? What's the matter in there?" There was no answer except the sobbing by the one friend. Then the other friend said very clearly and distinctly, "Please mind your own business." The newspaper man was angry at this and thought he would call the desk and have them both thrown out of the hotel, and he would too if they had said anything more. As it was, he told them to cut it out and went back to bed. He could not sleep very well because the one friend sobbed for quite a long while, but finally ceased sobbing. The next morning, he saw them at breakfast outside the Café de la Paix, chatting together happily and reading copies of the Paris New York Herald. He pointed them out to me a day or two later, riding together in an open taxi, and I frequently saw them after that, sitting on the terrace of the Café des Deux Magots. Old lady. And is that all of the story? Is there not to be what we called in my youth a wow at the end? Ah, madam, it is years since I added the wow to the end of a story. Are you sure you're unhappy if the wow is omitted? Old lady. Frankly, sir, I prefer the wow. Then, madam, I will not withhold it. The last time I saw the two, they were sitting on the terrace of the Café des Deux Magots, wearing well-tailored clothes, looking clean-cut as ever, except that the younger of the two, the one who had said he would kill himself rather than go back in that room, had had his hair hennaed. Old lady. This seems to me a very feeble wow. Madam, the whole subject is feeble, and too hearty a wow would overbalance it. Would you like me to relate another story? Old lady. Thank you, sir, but this will be enough for today.